Today, Phil and I split and I went to Balcom's village to interview some of the villagers in their homes. Phil remained in the Reclaims the Power camp and managed to interview some people from different groups and some of the children around there. So tell us, what would you like to give to the audience?
People out there have got to realise that we here in Balcom are fighting not just for Balcom, not just for our own clean air, clean water, to keep our village clean and pleasant and not an industrialised site. We're fighting for the rest of the country, because two-thirds of this country has been sold or is being sold at this moment by the government. The underbelly of two-thirds of this country sold to oil and gas companies to extract oil. The thing about fracking is that you have to get close up to the rocks containing the oil in order to extract the oil. In conventional oil and gas exploration, historically, you're sinking down a vertical well into... In conventional oil and gas exploration, you're sinking down a vertical well into a reservoir of oil that just surges back up the pipe. With fracking, you have to get really close to it. You can crack the rock within about 50 metres of your pipe, your vertical pipe and your horizontal pipe. And that means that you've got to have wells at very, very regular intervals right across the countryside. Fracking will mean the industrialisation of the British countryside. There may be a lot of gas down there, but it's going to be very, very expensive to extract. Quadrilla themselves have admitted that fracking will not lower gas prices in this country. You know, Cameron has been saying in papers this last week that, you know, we should roll over and be fracked for the greater good of the country because this will lower gas prices. It is absolutely not true. Quadrilla themselves admit that it's not true, and Ofgem admit that it's not true. Where does he get it from? I would really like to know his workings. You know, the industry and the government are saying constantly that we here in Balcom are ignorant, you know, that we're scaremongering, that we don't know what we're talking about. But that's not true. You know, we have been researching fracking now for 20 months. I haven't been doing my day job because I've spent too much time researching fracking, and, you know, we know a lot about it. Sometimes I feel that we know a lot more about it than the government ministers. Originally, when Quadrilla applied for planning permission 3 years ago, they applied for permission to frack. When they came back to us about 3 months ago and said, OK, we're now going to do this, they were very clever. We'd been protesting and lobbying against fracking and against shale in particular. So in their letter to the village, they said, oh no, don't worry, dears, we're not going to frack and we're not going to target shale at all. We're going to target a different kind of rock. In fact, it's micrite here in Balcom, and it's not gas, but it's oil. Saying that they're not going to frack has meant that it's been easier for them to get through the regulations, to get the permits that they needed. They were hoping that it was going to soothe the village, and, you know, they were hoping that we would make less fuss if they were not going to frack, if it was just a conventional drilling. And I think they were hoping they were going to silence the press, because all our campaigning has been on the basis of fracking. What in fact they're going to do is take the pressure in that well up to just under fracturing point, so just up to the point where the rock is not quite cracking. And because it's not shale, because they're going into a calcium carbonate rock, they're going to use acid to make little pathways into the rock to let just enough oil seep out so that they can tell what's there, so they have some idea of whether, when they frack in the future, you know, the process will be worthwhile. What they're doing at the moment is simply a precursor of fracking, and saying that they're not going to frack, well, long term, it's a lie. We're a small island. We're a beautiful island. And this process is absolutely not appropriate. So close up to human habitation, so close up to farmland. I really cannot imagine what the government is thinking, destroying our green and pleasant land. One of the very important aspects of fracking that hasn't really been covered very much in the last weeks is the waste. A lot of waste water flows back from a fracking well. Partly this is the fluid that's been put down there, so a lot of water containing things like biocides and lubricants, but also water that the frack water has gathered down below the ground, containing saline solutions, salt, heavy metals, and also radioactivity. I mean, the frac fluid that came back from the well near Blackpool that was fracked over a year ago, it was so radioactive that it couldn't legally be transported on British roads. It had to sit for quite a long time in tanks on site and then disappeared. The locals were surprised. It disappeared. And we heard later that it had been treated, minimally treated, we understand, at a water treating plant called Davyhulme, and then the remains dumped into the Manchester Ship Canal. What's happening in America to all these huge volumes of frack fluid? A lot of it is being taken off to Ohio. A lot of the fracking is being done in Pennsylvania, but the frack fluid goes off to Ohio, where it's dumped down wells, old wells, disused wells, out of sight, out of the water cycle forever, because it can't be treated. It cannot be treated and made safe. And Ohio has been experiencing a real rash of earthquakes in the last years since this process has begun. This is for two reasons. One, the frack fluid down the wells changes the pressure down in the depths. Also, because the frack fluid contains lubricants, it lubricates the faults and the faults slip and you get an earthquake. And the British government and the industry have not yet told us how they intend to treat the vast quantities of wastewater that will be created by fracking on the scale that the government and the industry is looking at in this country, in the UK. We in the south of England have had many droughts over the last few years. How much water is fracking going to use? If you look at Texas, the farmers there are in serious fight with the oil and gas industry for water. The farmers there and the inhabitants are in serious conflict with the oil and gas industry for this limited resource. Animals are dying in Texas because the oil and gas industry is using the water. Water is expensive because the oil and gas industry will pay for it. The farmers can't pay for it.
Tell me about you and how does fracking make you feel as a villager?
My name's Colette Randall and I've lived in this village for about 35 years. It's a beautiful, wonderful village. It's a very special village because it's the sort of village where, as you walk round, people say good morning and good afternoon to each other, even if they've never seen them before. That's something I would hate to ever have to change. I've worked in this village as a special needs teacher for over 20 years. I've been on the parish council for 4 years. I know how difficult their job can be, especially with all the situation that's happening at the moment. When I first heard that fracking might be coming to our village, at first I was ambivalent. I wasn't quite sure whether I was pro or anti. But since then, I've done my own research and I've begun to realise that it's potentially, I think, a very, very dangerous way of trying to get the last of the carbon fuel out of the earth. And I would recommend anybody who's listening to go onto YouTube and listen to Dr. Marianne Lloyd-Smith, who's the senior advisor of National Toxics Network, Inc., because her short speech is the most cogent and precise I've heard about the potential dangers of not just fracking but drilling, and not just gas but oil. And of course, it's oil that they're looking for in Bulcombe.
How do you feel about the community support camp?
I feel, as a neighbour of mine said, Linda Short, she hasn't got the courage to lie down in front of a lorry, but they have. So we're supporting them because they are actually trying to make a change in government policy. And the government doesn't seem to listen to all the democratic processes that we've tried to go through to get them to listen to our opinions.
How democracy is working at local and national level?
Well, having had the experience of being a Bulcombe Parish Councillor for 4 years, I realised pretty quickly that a parish council is really, in my opinion, a sop to democracy. It gives the local people the idea that if they elect someone locally, that they will be their representative. And indeed, they can be very good representatives. But they are volunteers, they're unpaid, they're doing their own job and have their own life aside of doing all the work that's involved in being on a parish council. And in fact, they have no teeth whatsoever. So any decision that a parish council makes or doesn't make, they will get all the flack, but they won't actually get to make any decisions. The decisions are taken by the district councils. And of course, they are, you know, top down from the government.
Is this a not in my backyard issue?
No, I don't think it is, because we used to have an organisation in Bulcombe called the Bulcombe Footpath and Conservation Association. And I spent many weeks of my life renovating a pond, renovating a meadow. I care deeply about the environment. I've always cared deeply about teaching children in schools about the environment. And I think that this is a potentially very, very dangerous activity that could affect our environment, not just in Balcombe, but over the whole of Sussex. Because as you know, this is one exploratory well. But if something is found, or once they get into the shale, the whole of the Weald potentially could be covered in thousands of these rocks. As I say, this village is a special village, a beautiful village, and a really warm and friendly village. Unfortunately, though, over the last few days, there's been a tension caused in the village by a small number of individuals, I think, really, who are obsessed by the appearance of people who've come to this village to protest. They can't see the wood for the trees. It doesn't matter what people look like. It matters what people believe, and it matters why they're here. They're not all unemployed layabouts. I've met people who've come past my house because I've been too ill to go down there and spoken to them. And they come from all walks of life. They've sometimes come, you know, when they finish work at 7 o'clock in the evening, just for a night. So it's not just this crowd of faceless people that some people are writing them off as. I'd just like to finish with a quote from Dr. Marianne Lloyd-Smith, because fracking companies often come out with the comment that it's been being done for 50 years, it doesn't cause any damage, it's perfectly safe. She says that comparing the fracking that's done today with the fracking that was done 50 years ago is like comparing a canoe to a nuclear submarine, because the amount of high volume and high slick substance now that's used in modern fracking is nothing like was used 50 years ago. And also, of course, it's horizontal fracking too.
We know that the water got cloudy lately. Do you think that fracking has something to do with that?
I don't know. It happened to me. I'd just come out of hospital and I have to drink lots of water at the moment. And I noticed my water was a funny yellow straw colour. I phoned up South East Water and reported it and asked them if they could do something to help. They said the water was safe to drink. It was a receptionist. And I said to her, well, how do you know it's safe to drink? Because it hasn't actually been tested. She said it's because they've been working on the mains. There's been a burst water mains. So I said, well, can you tell me exactly where it is? And she said it's in Brook Street, which is on the road to Cookfield, which is not far from where the Reclaim the Power camp have set up. It was also rather close to the fracking, to the drilling site. So I was a bit concerned about that. And I said, do you think it could be anything to do with the drilling? And she said she didn't think so. Also, they asked me to run my water for an hour until it went to see if it would go clear, and they would compensate me for my water meter bill. The next day, an engineer phoned up and asked me if the water had become clear again, and it had. So I asked him the same question about the drilling, and he said that he didn't think it was to do with that. But I did say to him, well, I wonder if they've started horizontal drilling yet, because, of course, that goes a long way underground and causes vibrations. And so I think, although I'm not scaremongering, but I just think that there's a possibility that some of these really old pipes that have been in the ground for years are probably more likely to fracture if there's vibrations going through the ground near that site. Our water mains go all the way up that road and all the way back down the other side, I believe. So maybe this is something we've got to look forward to.
How does fracking make you feel as a villager?
Well, as a villager, naturally I'm concerned, because one of the things is, if you live in the countryside, you live there because you love it. If you don't love the countryside, you've got towns and cities you can live in. So we want to protect the countryside. It's not so much a question of protesting as protecting, because here is an area of outstanding beauty, and we don't want to see it being ruined. That is a simple answer to that.
When did you first hear that Balcombe might be fracked?
Oh, it was in January last year. Somebody in the village who just happened to notice a very small article in a newspaper that they were going to drill in Sussex, and they started to investigate, and that's when we found that permission had been given to drill down at the Lower Stumble site.
How do you feel about the community support camp?
I'm in favour of it, in as much as we've gone through all the democratic processes and it's got nowhere, so there's only one thing left for us now, and that is direct action. And it's very heartening that so many people feel the way that we do, and they have come from a long way away and they've now set up a camp there. I'm all in favour of it, basically.
What does all of this say about how democracy is working at local and national level?
Well, I would say it's not working, frankly, because our MP won't assist us. He's in favour of it. We've been through all the democratic channels that are left, and that is why we've come up with the only answer left, which is direct action.
Is this a not in my backyard issue?
No. The NIMBY thing is very simple. NIMBYism is take your waste incinerator and put it somewhere else, or divert the bypass to the red route instead of the blue route. This is not NIMBYism. This is all about protection of the countryside, protection of an area of outstanding natural beauty.
And we know that the water got cloudy lately. Do you think that fracking has something to do with that?
I don't know if the water has changed. Personally, I filter the water anyway. But the risk is that if they damage an aquifer and pollution gets into the reservoir, then there are, as to my information, there are 84,000 properties that draw water from that reservoir. And if they pollute it, that'll be 84,000 properties without running water. Well, it seems to me that Bolcombe is becoming a bit of a cause célèbre. There was fracking in Lancashire, but the scale and size and strength of the protest in Bolcombe is, I think, has surprised the authorities. I hope they're going to sit up and take notice. And more to the point, I hope that all of the people who live in this part of the countryside where there are proposed licences for fracking will also sit up and take notice and do something before permission is granted. Get your objections into your local parish councils and your county councils. Find out if there's anything, remotest bit of information about applications for drilling, and make sure that your objections are in there thick and fast to stop what's happening in Bolcombe.
How do you feel about about being here?
Well, it's fun, and basically it's like sociable, so I'll meet you, and we'll meet more people, and it's pretty important because people are destroying the environment, and that's why we're here, and more people should be doing it, and it's not noticed as much as it should be. So like fracking is happening up in the town, and they're fully against it, but the government don't really care. They're just like, we want to make some money, so let's make it. So this is here because No Dash for Gas, and it's a campaign against fracking, so it's pretty important. So if we weren't doing it, nothing would happen.
Yeah. What do you personally think about fracking?
Well, I don't know much about it, but what I do know is it's ruining the countryside, and it's quite bad for the environment. Like, usually what was happening before fracking, they just put a pipe in the sea or the ground and they pump the oil out with a tiny bit of water sometimes. But now they're getting jets and squirting it into the rock and smashing all the rock, and it's kind of just ruining like the nature sort of. And it's not really that safe. Like, it's probably killing quite a lot of animals and stuff like that.
Why did you come to this camp?
One, because my dad was in up the chimney and No Dash for Gas protest. So I came with them, and it's good fun. You meet more people and you get to climb a tripod.
What is the tripod?
Tripod's basically four steel or aluminium poles that join together. Three. Aluminium poles that join together, cross together, and it's so you close the gate, and it's so the police can't come in and like move the tripod, because there might be someone in the top. If they fall out, the police would get sued or something, so it's not very good. And that's what it's for, basically, so the police can't get in to the camp.
Right, so they put it in front of the gate, and
so if the police wanted to come in with vans and stuff, they wouldn't be able to, because the tripod would be blocking the way, and there would be someone right in the top, so they couldn't be able to move it.
And what do you think of the camp?
Well, it was good fun, and they've designed it brilliantly. Like, there's a kids' space, main marquee, and there's lots of workshops. And, well, my sister's in the medics, and she says it's brilliant, so that must be quite good. And, like, people are social, like, talking to each other, and it's good fun for everyone, I think.
Have you been to any workshops?
No. I don't really want to. I like staying around here, going to the gate and stuff.
Do you like the food here?
Oh, the food's amazing, yeah.
What kitchen do you normally go to?
I've only been going to the Bradford kitchen over there. I don't really like any of the others.
What do you think of the adults that are here?
What do you think of the adults that are here?
Most of them are good. Some, I don't know most of them, but ones that I know, I get on with them quite well and I have a good time with them.
Thank you, you've been very good help. What do you think of the camp?
I think it's good.
How long have you been to the camp?
About 3 or 4 days.
What do you think of it?
I think it's amazing.
What do you know about fracking?
Well, they get like this massive drill and they dig a mile down, then they turn to left, dig a mile, and then they put all of this like chemicals and liquid, so it destroys the water so the cows can't drink or we can't drink.
What do you think about the compost toilets here?
Well, it's good, but they're really famous because I had to wait like 30 minutes for someone to finish a poo before I can go in one.
Why?
I don't know. It just took so long to do a poo.
Thank you for helping us, Herbie. You've been a great help.
What's interesting about Reclaim the Power is for the first time you've got a very strong mixture between climate justice activists but also economic justice activists and social justice activists. So that includes UK Uncut and Occupy, Disabled People Against Cuts, Fuel Poverty Action, as well as No Dash for Gas, of course, Campaign for Climate Change. So you've got all these different groups coming together. The big phrase really is joining the dots, because this issue of the Dash for Gas affects people at all different levels. In terms of economic justice, there's obvious links between this government and the massive fossil fuel corporations that are pushing through a completely insane energy policy. And there's the obvious dirty connections between our cabinet and actually, you know, personal connections, like Lord Howe being the father-in-law of Osborne, for example, and the influence of Lord Brown, who's the head of Quadrilla and is absolutely embedded within the government. So there's those links. That's why you've got people like Occupy here, obviously, but you've also got Fuel Poverty Action. The fact that 7,000 people die every winter because of fuel poverty is an absolute disgrace, and the Dash for Gas will really mean that the prices won't go down. In fact, they're completely controlled by a monopoly, which is the big six energy corporations, and the prices will go up inevitably, so more people will be caused to die during the winter, mainly old age pensioners, but also a huge amount of people who die in the winter are people who live with disabilities, which this is why DPAC are so concerned, and that's why they're here in force, and they're giving great workshops and great speeches. They're really prominent here. UK Uncut, of course, again, with these businesses, the avoidance of paying taxes, or the fiddling of the evading of taxes, basically. UK Uncut are very connected to that. And then the obvious reasons for the climate organisations to be here in terms of a nightmarish future with runaway climate change, or the alternative to push towards sustainables and renewables. And of course, the fossil fuel corporations have forced the government with their huge lobbying power to move away from any talk of sustainables and renewables. A lot of the media that we've been looking at since we've been here is really pushing that out to the public, the idea as if you don't go for gas, you're stuck with coal. There's absolutely no mention of the fact that leave the fossil fuels in the ground and actually go for renewables and sustainables. It's just not evident, and hardly evident at all in mainstream media at the moment. So the public discourse has just been shut down completely. So at all levels, really, all these different groups are very much affected by this one key issue. And that's a movement building moment, really. And it's only just started in that sense. It'll be interesting to see where it goes next.
And how easy has it been for all those different groups coming from different positions to work together?
That's a fantastic question, because a lot of us have been remarking about the fact that it's incredibly smooth for everyone to be mixing together. It's an incredibly supportive system where you've got groups who've, lots of groups like Fuel Poverty Action or UK Uncut, perhaps they were involved in climate camp to an extent in the past, but Occupy definitely, most Occupies have never been to a sort of climate camp setup, and everyone is mutually supportive instantly, and that's been really brilliant to see. So there's no sort of, oh, our group's more important than yours. It's quite the opposite. It's like, actually, together we're much, much, much stronger. And that's really, really interesting about this camp.
So welcome to the second plenary of Reclaim the Power. Yay. Did you have a good day? Brilliant. Look at how many people there are. It's fantastic. This is amazing. And loads of people are outside waiting to eat yet still. So they'll be coming in. So we have a really, really exciting plenary for you now. And first, we're just going to have a couple practical updates. After that, we have some amazing speakers. And after that, we'll have some more discussion about the things to come in the next few days.
But first, we're going to have an update from the actions side of things, which hopefully somebody will have ready and will bring this way.
Okay, really quick. So I know that we had a really great day of workshops, and we're going to talk about that later on. But we also have coming up actions. And in preparation for the actions, I was given a note from someone who was given the note by the action team to give to you tonight. So I think it was probably three people in between me and the action fairies. So the note as written by them is, thank you very, very much for being so excited about the actions and for everyone that has filled in the two forms already. So if you have, give yourself a round of applause. Oh, see, not many people have. So I think they probably meant those three people. Thank you to them. Well, have no fear. You have another last chance to communicate with the action fairies. I'm going to explain that to you now. Okay, so we have this form. Notice it's a smaller form. It's a half-page form. This is a matchmaking form. This is for individuals who have come here who are not already with an affinity group or aren't planning to do an action with a group already formed. So the idea with this is you fill this out, you put your name on it, or you can put a different name if you want to put a different name that you're known by. But you also have to put your village name on this. Yeah? And then with that, there's so many things to remember. So you fill this out, and people will be collecting these forms. If Brad and Becky could stand up. Give them a round of applause. Okay, so we will be distributing these forms in the next hour to everybody here, this and this form that I will also explain. And they will be collecting the forms on that door of the marquee. We'll also give you time to fill them out today. And we ask you not to leave until you've filled out the form. There's also music in here afterwards, so there's lots of reasons to stay. Okay, so what happens with these is they get given to the action fairies and they will match make. They'll put you they'll give a suggestion as to people that you might be able to form a group with. And there is a meeting tomorrow at 12 o'clock noon in the main marquee, which is this one. And that is where all the people that filled out the matchmaking forms come and get matched into groups. Does that make sense? Yeah? I know there's some confusion about it yesterday. If you're not an individual, if you're an affinity group or a group of friends that maybe want to do an action together, we have another form, the larger form, the A4 form. Please fill this out. You'll also be given this today. And so when you leave today, you will fill this out or you will fill this out. And what happens with these is you are then given a mission. And the mission is exactly what a mission is. I will explain what we do with that. Okay, so at 2 o'clock tomorrow, we will have a meeting in the main marquee here in which you will receive your mission. How you choose to do your mission will be completely up to you. And then because how you choose to do it determines what you'll do with your time. That then gives you the chance to decide if you're going to stay on camp tomorrow to prepare for your mission, or if you're going to join the march tomorrow at 3 in Balcombe. It got changed to 1:30 tomorrow. Yeah? So the 2 o'clock meeting where you receive your mission. So 12 o'clock meeting for all the single people that want to be match made. And then, really, it's quite exciting to think about who you might be matched with. Just look around. A lot of options. So 12 o'clock for that. 1:30 here, everybody, in which those newly formed groups and oldly formed groups are given your exciting mission. So a round of applause for that. It's very exciting. Last point from the Action Fairies. Between 3 and 7 o'clock tomorrow, this marquee will turn into Action Central. This is going to be the Action Info Point. Brad and Becky, who stood up before, will also be here as your main points. And that's where you can come if you have any questions about the action, maybe you need maps, equipment, things like that. So you can come here from 3 till 7. And by equipment, I mean like a flat tire on your bike or, you know, if you, anything like that. Nothing too dodgy. So 3 to 7 here tomorrow. 12 o'clock, 1:30, 3 to 7. That's it from the Action Fairies.
Cool. So before we get to the speakers, we've also got an international solidarity message, which someone's going to tell us about, which is quite exciting. Fee, do you want to come?
Hello. Hey. A community in Ghana, West Africa, has sent this solidarity message to the people involved in the struggle in Balcombe, because their land and water is also being poisoned by mining and extraction companies who are causing obscene genocide and suffering there. So I can't read the whole thing, but I'll just try and, because it's too long, but I'll just read some bits of it, and then hopefully later you can read it in the welcome tent, the whole thing. So it starts with, "Let us strengthen our eco-resistance connections to win global justice." And it says, saying thank you in many ways. And then, "Together in genuine Ubuntu internationalist solidarity, we shall win. So as we say in the Pan-African Movement for Global Justice, let us wisely fight harder at our combat posts in various trenches all over the world in such interconnected ways and means of Ubuntu, so as to more strongly link up our many freedom-fighting battlegrounds into one love front line of victorious global justice resistance. Aiku, Ubuntu Mantla, power to our peoples."
So the whole of that letter will be up in the welcome tent. So please do go and read it and check it out. Great. So time to charge on with the speakers. Now the idea here is that we're gonna start very, very local with the issues, and then we're going to move outwards. So I'd just first like to invite someone to come and talk about what's happening right here in Balcombe. And so, Vanessa, would you like to come and take the microphone?
This is bloody lovely. Apologies for any repetition from last night. Kelly's going to tap me on the shoulder after 4 minutes. I have to fit it into 5 minutes. So I've been asked to give a timeline of the way things started here. So I live 4 miles away from the site, in a village a little bit further away, and somebody in Transition Forest Row had seen me talking about a petition online about a UK moratorium, which we rapidly learned was futile, the whole petition idea. Went to see a few people from Frack Off in Brighton who had been doing the research and told me exactly what ecocidal juggernaut was heading for the whole country if we didn't stop it. And I sat with it for a couple of weeks and thought, if I take this on, it will change my life. And it has. Came to visit the site with 3 other people. Thought, they can't possibly. It's right by a railway line. It's right by a reservoir and a river. But this is coming. This area has big media coverage. We're close to London, all of that. Let's get on this. Let's see if we can wake a few people up to what's coming to the whole country. Called a meeting in the village hall. It was rammed. Quadrilla asked if they could come and speak at that meeting. Will gave a searing presentation beforehand. They then made absolute fools of themselves with their PowerPoint. They're clearly used to very credulous audiences, and 298 of those 300 people metaphorically lynched them. And it was page three of The Guardian the next day, and it hasn't stopped from there. So started a Facebook page. Initially, no fracking in Sussex, but Sussex... Fat-free sausage is what Private Eye did with the frack-free sausage. I still can't say it. Bit tired. Yeah, so Facebook page, website. Core group of Balcombe residents who were aware at that point got involved, but the majority of Balcombe residents just were not aware and for whatever reason didn't want to believe it was going to happen. We didn't necessarily believe it was going to happen. They were so busy in Lancashire. And it's wonderful. Tina's going to speak soon from RAF, but we've also got Ribble Estuary Against Fracking who've just arrived, and they were the first group, really. So, yes! And they have done so much work. They do so much research. Eve and Graham, everyone. We've learnt so much from them. I've only got 1 minute left already. Shit. Okay. So, we've been fighting this for 2 years, year and a half, 2 years. They've got their drill bits into the ground. Maybe Balcombe is sacrificial because we don't know what's gone in there, but we can stop the rest of it. And hallelujah, that you're the cavalry. This is the cavalry. Thank goodness. We've got so much media attention now. I don't know where it's going to go. Nobody knows where it's going to go, but we're making a big difference, and we have to do this, and we just have to get the truth out there any way we can, to communities, to people, to media, social media, however we do it. So I went on from Frack Free Sussex a year ago, and then I started BIF, which is Britain and Ireland Frack Free. And we've called together now, linked up with all the British and Irish groups. And if anybody, if you want to get involved with this more with social media wise, go to Britain and Ireland Frack Free. There's a note there that's got a whole list of all the groups. If there isn't a group in your area, start one. Tell me, we'll put it on the list. Let's all work together. One thing I want to say, the Gurkhas at the camp, the guys who are protecting the camp, it's just something that came to me yesterday. I went around the back of the field. There's been a lot of aggression, a lot of shame on you to all the people going in there. I've just started saying namaste to the Gurkhas, and they reply, and it means I honour the God in you. And I went on the radio last night up against Peter Lilly, who's a deeply invested politician and a very nasty piece of work. And I think, well, what do I do? It's a bigger philosophical question, and I've got to hand over, but can we try and find some compassion and try and shift the whole consciousness on this, because this whole fossil fuel industry is so dangerous, but I'm fighting and fighting and fighting, and we need to find another way. Tina from Residents Action... Tina's from... RAF. Residents Action on Filed Fracking, and she's going to do the next bit of the timeline.
It's okay. We come in all sizes when we fight fracking. I'm Tina Rothery, and I'm with Residents Action on Filed Fracking. Half our contingent is over there and have been down to this camp for every weekend for the last 4 weeks. One of us has been left behind to hold the space and has now become part of the feature. We came down to Balcombe because of people like Reef and Vanessa and all the other amazing people throughout the country. We have an amazing network that informs each other. Frack Off are an amazing resource of information, well-researched, so that we can safely all front cameras. Yeah, yay, Frack Off. We all had to learn amazing skills quite quickly. And so people like Vanessa or me or Reef or anyone, Eve McNamara, we have to front press. And you can only do that when you have the confidence and the trust not to be shot down with your information, because, you know, Quadrilla get away with lies and manipulation because they have a really big, expensive PR agency. We have two weapons, truth and determination. And those two weapons are all we have. So we guard our credibility. And we only have that credibility because we're linked together. And we can say, I don't know, I can say to someone else in any other group, you know, I hear this is the only rig, and then we'll debate that for a while. Is it the only rig? And then we'll check with all our sources, and we can enrich our knowledge. And I think that's where we're racing ahead, and the government and Quadrilla are not catching up, is because we've managed to have this amazing connection, and we're very honest and open and determined. When they speak during office hours. They speak in PR speak. They speak because they're paid to speak. We speak. We give up time, and we dedicate everything everything to this and this gorgeous room, because we damn well give a damn. These people don't, and I think we win for that. And I think that this nationwide connectivity that also then links, I mean, when Vanessa set up Britain Ireland Fact Free, it was just a logical step. My sister Julie and I went out to Ireland and with Bob to support the Friends of the Earth Ireland when they were against fracking for the G, whatever it was. It was just so long. There's been too many trips. But the joy of getting into new places anywhere in this country and finding people just like you means you sleep better at night. I mean, just knowing all of you are now in this and giving a damn means that people like us don't feel so alone on the days where you've been hit by too much media and too much bad news and too much lies. So as it is, the network has reached out. We're also connected with Australia and America and Canada. And sometimes we ask them to do things on the same day. If we have an action, we call on everyone to come up to us. And I just think that now we've just enriched this with so much fresh blood. I think we are such a force to be reckoned with. And if someone said, what did I think of this? I said, you're the exclamation point we've been waiting for. You know, because there's been so much going on and we needed something big to go bang. You know, you haven't noticed how big we got. So anyway, thank you very much for coming.
Awesome. So we've heard a bit about what's been happening locally. We've heard a bit about how this is part of a pattern of people fighting back nationally and in Ireland as well. So now we're going to move it a bit more internationally. Hamza, are you ready to come and say a few words? Fantastic.
Hello, everyone. I've been asked to talk about energy extraction beyond the UK, and I'm going to talk about Algeria specifically. But before I'm going to do that, it was just to emphasize the importance of global solidarity between different communities. Because if the communities here in Balkan succeed in resistance to the rule of big money, it won't be just the victory of this community, but it will be the victory of all of us, of all communities in the world. Thank you. Last April, we organized a small action here when the Algerian energy minister came to promote business in Algeria with the UK. And we did an anti-fracking action, and we were heartened by the support we received from organizations like Frack of London, and we had even some activists, they had a meeting in London coming from Lancashire, and it's really heartening to see this beautiful solidarity between that transcends borders, and this is really important. And I think one other factor that we need to keep in mind when trying to be supporting global communities from the global south, is that these communities are not facing only environmental issues or energy extraction issues. They are usually suffocated by Western-backed dictatorships that are allowing their lands to be grabbed, their resources to be robbed, and their lives to be destroyed. And this game involves Western elites, involves big multinationals, and involves local parasitic bourgeoisies that are oppressing all the people. So, like the case of Algeria, for example, Algeria is a very rich country. It has a lot of oil and gas, and it's providing these resources to the EU. And by maintaining this kind of relationship between the EU, the UK, and Algeria, it's just making it harder for the people on the ground to fight these authoritarian regimes. Last January, David Cameron went to Algeria and was praising the Algeria efforts to fight terrorism and talking about military partnership. What it means is arming brutal dictatorship that is oppressing their own people. And this is wrong, and we need to challenge it. Especially when we see this kind of deals, business deals, done blindly without giving any regard to the human rights and to the struggle of the people on the ground. Algeria, where the energy resources come from the south. It's the Big Sahara. The communities are marginalized there. And in the last 2 years, they have been mobilizing thousands and thousands of people protesting for decent lives, for decent jobs. And these are really ignored. People do not hear about these things in the West. They think, so when countries, the UK and the EU, praise elections like they did last year in May, they said that the elections were transparent, were fair. This is completely wrong. These are big lies. And we need to expose that. We need to scrutinize these kind of relationships in here and make some pressures on governments to not provide arms, to not deal with these authoritarian regimes. Thank you.
Okay, so now we're going to step in a different direction and we're going to look at the sort of how this fits into the picture of energy policy and energy supply. And next up, we're now going to, again, look at this issue from another angle and look at some of the consequences of what's going on with energy at the moment in terms of real impacts on people, what we can do about that. And Ruth, are you ready to come and say a few words about fuel poverty?
Okay, I'm not going to say much about fuel poverty. It's enough to say that over 7,000 people a year die in this country because they can't afford to heat their homes. That a lot of people get ill from pneumonia, hypothermia, and other illnesses that you wouldn't even think are to do with the cold, but they are, especially old people and people with disabilities who get ill. A lot of other people don't get ill, but they spend their whole winter living in a duvet. And that's no kind of a way to live in one of the richest countries in the world or in any country in the world. What I am going to talk about is the battles that are taking place on this terrain. Because the people who are in debt to the fuel companies or live waiting for the lights to click off because the meters run out, those are people on a front line. They're a frontline community. Isn't visible as a community, but it is a frontline community. And part of the battle is a battle of belief and lies, because one of the main ways that they're trying to sell fracking to us is by, and fossil fuels generally, is by saying that this is what we need to keep our bills down. And if you go in the media tent and look at what you've got on the walls there, there's the church coming out and saying, well, we can't really be against fracking because we mustn't forget the poor. Like fracking helps the poor. The government and the energy companies are running a very deliberate campaign, making out that it's green measures, as they say, that put the bills up, and that fracking will bring them down. It's not FIBS. FIBS is a good acronym, but it's not FIBS. It's lies. And if you don't believe in a conspiracy, conspiracy theories, have a look at the real conspiracy when you see these people talk to each other about how they have to divide and rule us. The kind of division that they're trying to do in this case, they divide and rule on everything. You know, the lies about welfare, the lies about immigration, all of it's divide and rule. But on climate, what they try to do is they make out that this climate and everything to do with the natural world is some kind of luxury for rich, well-heeled people, and that those of us who can't afford to pay our energy bills can't afford to worry about things, little luxuries like that. That is such a slander. First of all, that people who are working class people don't care about nature and animals and the land. Secondly, that the climate doesn't affect poorer people, in fact, even more than richer people. And thirdly, that our bills are going to come down because of gas. Of the great increase in prices that we've seen recently, 60% has been due to the rising price of gas. 10% has been due to what they call renewables, and that includes nuclear and biofuels, which a lot of us wouldn't say are green at all. Even Quadrilla say that that fracking would only put down the price of fuel in this country by 2 to 4%, if at all. And even in the US, which is a great shining example of where it's supposed to have brought the bills down, no way. The costs have come down in industry, but for the consumer, the prices have doubled. The same policies, the same fuels, the same companies, and the same government departments are destroying the climate and at the same time pushing up the bills. but they're still trying to divide us. They are running things like what they call the great energy swindle. No, that is not the big six and their price fixing and their profiteering. What that is they're saying that it's a con. Climate change is a con designed by the government to force renewables on you and put up your energy bill. This is playing as a grassroots campaign. But in fact, it's run by the same companies that brought you the lie about tobacco. Remember? It doesn't really cause cancer. Those same companies, the same companies that are saying we have to isolate the activists. That's their words. Isolate the activists and turn the realists so that we can get through and keep our profit margins up. We have to avoid playing into the class divisions that they're trying to promote. And we've come a long way on that. I'm really pleased this weekend, since Climate Camp, you can see the difference. Fuel Poverty Action came out of Climate Camp because a lot of people wanted to focus on climate and economic survival issues at the same time. But we did have some opposition from people saying, actually, the fuel prices should go up because then people will burn less fuel. Never mind the fact they might die as a result. That's going down now, and instead we have No Dash for Gas going up that chimney and making fuel poverty one of their key messages. Instead we have Balcombe, which is refusing to play into the NIMBYist thing and say, okay, not in my backyard, put the fracking in the desolate north. We have to be sure that we keep that up and that we make sure that we tackle the lies that they're giving us. Tackling lies when these lies are so important to them, when it's their main way of justifying their use of fracking and their use of fossil fuels. Tackling the lies is a kind of action in itself. If I've got another moment, I'd like to just read a resolution that was passed by the Greater London Pensioners Association. They started off, many of them, believing what the tabloids said about fossil fuels and climate change. But this year they passed a resolution that says, energy companies should not be allowed their skyrocketing bills and obscene profits at the expense of people's lives. Climate change poses a real threat to everything we've worked and fought for ourselves and our children and grandchildren. Because of climate change and because of the rising price of gas and other fossil fuels, energy policy should be to move away from subsidizing and promoting these fuels and to invest instead in alternatives. By this, we mean developing clean, climate-friendly, renewable energy from the wind, sun, waves, and tides under democratic control and for the benefit of our communities. It must be a priority to fully insulate homes and prevent the waste of energy, deaths, illness, and suffering caused by cold homes and fuel poverty. Energy should go back under public ownership. That's progress.
Okay, we have one more speaker to speak on climate change. Simon, let's come say a few words.
Hello, everyone. So I'm a scientist, and I work on one part of the climate change problem, and this is the latest lecture I've ever done. So I'm going to do 150 years of science and 100 years into the future in less than 5 minutes. So I'm going to try not to go too fast or skip too much. So if you imagine the Earth going around the sun. Now, the amount of energy that comes into the Earth affects the climate, the oceans, and the land surface. So small changes in the Earth's orbit, tilts of the Earth's axis have big impacts on the climate and on the conditions on Earth. So that's our kind of start point. If we then think about things a little bit more complex, so if we think of Earth as actually, it's an atmosphere, it's a land surface, and it's the oceans, and those things interact. So we know that the oceans, some of that water evaporates into the atmosphere, comes down as rain elsewhere. If we think of that system, now, the atmosphere is not just the same as space. So it's a set of gases. And some of those gases trap some of the heat coming from the sun. One of those gases, carbon dioxide, a relatively small constituent in the atmosphere, but is essentially a thermostat to Earth's temperature. So at the moment, causes it to be much warmer than it would be without those heat-trapping gases. So what are we doing today? And what have we been doing in the past? Now, fossil fuels were created in the age of the Carboniferous. A long time ago, lasted about 350 million years. Now, since the 1850s, if we go forward and burn all those fossil fuels and put all that fossil carbon into the atmosphere, that'll be over about 350 years. So we'll be putting about a million years worth, we are, a million years worth of the creation of fossil fuel carbon, squirting it into the atmosphere every single year at the moment. So instead of those very, very slow climatic changes that we see with changes in the Earth's orbit, we now see incredibly fast changes. So those geologically enormous changes, for example, when the dinosaurs were made extinct 65 million years ago, those kind of rapid changes geologically that were happening over hundreds of thousands to millions of years, now happening incredibly short time frames. And that's why it's so dangerous about how much carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere. So we've gone from about 280 parts per million up to today, we're moving close to 400 parts per million. We put 32 billion tons of CO2 into the atmosphere each year at the moment. And now I've only got 1 minute left and I've got quite a lot more to say. So that's going to have rapid major changes on planet Earth. So one of the big concerns is how much temperature rise can we see before we see agricultural productivity not rise to be able to feed Earth's human population. Now, in international negotiations, seeing that 2 degrees C is avoiding this kind of dangerous climate change. Are we going to meet a 2 degrees C target? We need to see declines in emissions of about 5% globally year on year, every year. Yet what we see is that when countries, even very rich countries, find fossil fuels, whether it's tar sands in Canada, fracking here or in the US, that carbon is coming out because there's big money involved. Now, in terms of the impacts, which is what I was supposed to talk about, we're not going to meet 2 degrees C. We're not going to see 5% declines in emissions globally for the coming decades. We're on a trajectory towards 3 or 4 degrees C mean average annual temperature warming by 2100. That will mean most of the ecosystems that you see in the world you will see will look nothing like they are today. Nothing like they are today. And that's why I think stepping outside of shoes of a scientist, it's completely unacceptable that we are exploring for and pulling out new fossil fuels in one of the richest countries in the world in the 21st century. So I say to the UK government and Cordrilla, frack off.
We've been here since the 16th of August. On Saturday, a lot of more people joined the Reclaim the Power camp. These were the opinions of the villagers, and let's see what happens tomorrow. See you then, and thanks for listening. Resonance FM 104.4.